The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What is it, Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation? Or is it Offenbach Friday? Or is it Can-Can Friday? Whatever it is, it's Michael Savage on Friday. It's a movable feast of the mind, to borrow a phrase from Ernest, dearest. Always love this, very cheerful. It's a loose Lutzfreck, Can-Can, Follies Bergère, skirts flying, Ternaud flying, minds flying, and here we are. Here we are, defying global warming liars on the Savage Nation. Thank you. Give them a Ternaud and we'll see them later on. This is the Savage Nation. We're open for business. Phone number, you know it, 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. The big story today is that Obama lied. And you cried. Now, why do I say that? Because he just gave an interview with Bloomberg where he said he would raise taxes on individuals making more than $200,000 a year, couples. Now, if you remember during the 08 presidential election campaign, the college teacher said he would not raise taxes on individuals making less than $200,000. Now he said he will raise taxes on anybody he wants to. And that's, of course, what you're facing here in America, which is a college teacher who has never held a job, a college teacher who's never met a payroll, a college teacher who's never produced a product, a college teacher who's never had to produce a product or a service that anybody actually needed, a college teacher who has only published papers and very few at that, a college teacher who thinks that just taxing people who earn the money is the way to run a government. I realize that taxes are boring, but so is death, and yet we're all facing taxes and death, aren't we? So let me begin with a story. I'll begin with last night. Here I am sitting in San Francisco on a cloudy, drizzly, beautiful day. And last night I had a movable feast up in North Beach. That's the Italian district of San Francisco. The reason I'm going to tell you the story is because it leads back to taxes and death, as does everything in my mind. At this stage of my life, every topic, no matter what it is, leads back to taxes and death. No matter how I try to get away from it, you'll see how it all leads back to taxes and death. And because I bash San Francisco because there's so much ugliness here from the bums and the foolish children who think that they're liberals but they're nothing but losers, that I may as well tell you about the beauty that I see here. Because I've been here for so long, there must be something I like, right? So let's start last night in San Francisco, because North Beach is to San Francisco as Paris is to France. North Beach is to San Francisco as New York City, or shall I say Manhattan, is to New York State. It's a different world. It's the old Italian district, some of the most charming architecture in the city. Particularly when the light is right, it blesses your eyes, the way light hits at a certain time. And it abuts Chinatown, which is also fascinating unto itself. So last night after the show, I walked up to North Beach, as I say, and I was very tired. I was drained. I was exhausted. I was dead, as I told you during the show. I didn't want to drink, so I thought. So I go up to the bar at the North Beach restaurant, and my friend Lorenzo is there. He comes over. He's the owner, and he says, well, what can I get you? I said, just get me a water. Get me the Hetch Hetchy, you know, 2010. It's fine. So I'm drinking ice water, and we're chatting and this and that. The next thing I know, I said, the hell with it. Just get me a vodka. That was the first one. Well, after a couple of them, I felt better. I got to tell you the truth. It unwound a lot of the problems that I had. So I said, all right, let me eat now. Now I got hungry. I wasn't even hungry. So I sit down, and he's not eating. It's his restaurant, I want to remind you. So I said, look, I'm on a low-fat diet. You know me for 30 years. I don't want to eat any, no cheese. No, he knows me. So they start me off with the eggplant, no cheese. It's become a famous dish in there now. People come from all over the country, ask for the Savage eggplant. I said, well, why don't you put my picture on the wall? I laugh, blah, blah, blah. So now he says, you want some prosciutto? I said, I don't eat ham. I don't eat fat. I said, let me try it. You know, it's typically me. It was the most delicious piece of ham I ever had in my life. And I'm dipping the bread in olive oil. Now, here's the story. Listen carefully. And I say to him, boy, your oil is good. He grows it up in Sonoma. I remember when he cut the land up there to plant the vineyards, the grapes, and when he planted the olive trees. It's 20 years ago. I was with him in Sonoma when he did it. He's a man of the earth. So he said, well, let me tell you something. We got half the production of olives this year that we did last year. I said, why? He said, the bees are dying. I said, what? He says, well, the bees are dying. I said, what's your theory? He says, well, my theory, as I heard, is that the cell phones, the signals from cell phones and cell phone towers are confusing the bees and they're dying. I had never heard that one. So when he told me that the olive orchard only produced half of the amount of olives from the year before and that olives are in short supply, I was stunned. And I thought, I mean, I would share it with you. Did you hear anything about cell phones and bees? Let's face it, we know that pesticides are overused in America, not only in our foods, but in our agricultural products. We understand that. That's why many of us choose organic products. But I didn't know that the bees were dying from cell phones and cell phone signals. It's really a disturbing fact of reality here. So now today, I stay over in the city, and I decide to take one of these two-hour walks in the San Francisco that I love. And I go down Market Street, if you know Market Street. Is, you know, it's older, kind of a lot of bums, but I love the hustle and bustle, people come in and out of the tube and blah, blah, blah. Then I cross back up street, and I wind up back in North Beach anyway because all roads for me have to lead me back there. Now listen to this. So I go all the way up to the top of a place I used to go, the top of Grant Avenue. I haven't been there in 10 years. There used to be a communist bookstore up there that I hated, and I even have a painting of the communist bookstore before it was a communist bookstore that I bought from an artist in the street 20 years ago. And I stumble upon an Oriental antique store going out of business. And it's just full. It's a little tiny store. A white guy owns it. His wife is a beautiful Japanese actress. And they're just, people are, you know, browsing and buying and this and that. So I said, how much are the cloisonné vases that you have in the window? She says to me a certain price. I think it was $200. I said, all right, I'll take them. $100 a piece. They're Japanese circa 1920. They're just really beautiful cloisonné. So I said, do you have any other cloisonné? So I trip over things. I go to the back of the store, and he pulls out two Chinese vases. And he said, these are older, and they're $200 a piece. I said, I'll take them. Reminded me of my, you know, the years when I was a kid in an antique store. And he kept asking me, he said, we're moving our warehouse back to the East Coast. I'm leaving till Sunday in a truck, whatever I don't sell. I'm going to drive in the snow. I'm going back to New York, blah, blah, blah. And he asked me if I go to Osaka, his favorite city, because he has a warehouse there. I said, no, I don't go to Osaka. He said, it's the most beautiful city in the world. He loves it. His wife's from there. I said, no, I was in Japan 20 years ago, and I never went back. I said, this city, North Beach and San Francisco, this part of the city, is my personal Paris, my personal Jerusalem. And I walked down the street with two shopping bags, with the four vases, one in each hand, with a smile on my face. And that was my 24-hour movable feast in San Francisco, the beauty that I never talk about. Now, there are many stories that I say all lead back to death and taxes. I could tell you that, in a way, led to death and taxes, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you exactly why. Because there it was. I bought these Japanese vases from the 1920s and Chinese vases from the 1860s, I guess. And he had a bunch of antique postcards that the Japanese printed of themselves at various New Year's parties and family parties. Faded black and white postcards of various Japanese families and group meetings. There it was again. I said, there they are. Celebrating a New Year's circa 1921, all dead, I suppose. And it brings you right back to your own mortality and you say to yourself, whatever. And you just amble down the street and you wonder how many more days you have to have a dance in the sun. I'll be right back.
Bestrafe mich, Stroh wird Gold und Gold wird Stein.
All right, it's the Savage Nation, a little heavy metal from Rammstein, because I guess you don't want to hear that. Wait, turn it off for a minute. You don't want to know about the kind of gentler side of Michael Savage, you know, the antiquarian, the guy who grows orchids, the boater, So I'll give you the hard side, because that's what you want. I mean, that's what you want. That's what you come to expect. You figure everyone on the right is only hard. There's no other side to them. And that shows you what stereotypes there are in the world. So I will never talk about antiques, cloisonnés, a movable feast, Paris, birds, the bees, the dogs, the olive trees. Nope, never again. So let's have a little Rammstein to satisfy the base audience. Let's hear it. Let's have it. Let's hear it. Let's have it. Let's hear it. Let's have it.
Bestrafe mich. Stroh wird Gold und Gold wird Stein. Deine Größe macht mich klein.
Deine Größe.
Du darfst
George Grosser.
Bestrafer sein.
Strafe. These guys know how to sing German. I am in a whacked out weirdo Friday mood, if you don't mind. Keep it going. Keep it going. I'm not afraid of losing the audience. They're coming into the tent. That tent is so full right now. Selected headlines from around the conservative brain on the Savage Nation. Come on into the tent for the old revival meeting, the old conservative revival meeting of the radio. I turn it off. I love the music, but they can't hear me in that. That's the problem. They can't do it. No, it doesn't work. Patrick, I'll give you the regular meat and potatoes. Here we go. Taxes for the middle class. So Obama lied and you'll be crying. Afghans like Taliban, opium crop, and hate NATO. You see, they don't want us there, and they don't want the NATO there because they really love growing opium poppies. It helps them feed their children. And now you understand the problem that we have in Afghanistan. What are you going to do? You're going to kill the opium crop? The Taliban now let them grow the opium crop. They're in partnership with them to fund their revolution. And so now we're sending in NATO troops. U.S. and British troops are going to go in there in the last offensive in one of the areas where there are strongholds of Taliban. And the local people saying, yet, we don't want you. We like growing opium. We don't want to grow. They have no way to make a living. That's what they grow there. Most of the world's crop of opium comes from Afghanistan. It was a subtext to the whole war. So there you go. How are you going to win a war like that? White House dismisses Iran's boast of nuclear breakthrough. The terror reviews of the Obama administration avoids the words Islam and Islamic. The only terrorists in America to Big Sis are returning military veterans, anti-abortion protesters, pro-churchgoers, and conservative listeners of talk radio. Not Islamic fascists. They're not on the list. Muslim fatwa issued against airport body scanners. Some Muslim American groups are supporting a fatwa issued by a body of Islamic so-called scholars in the U.S. forbidding Muslims from going through full body scanners at airports. You hear? This is what you call a throwback society, isn't it? You don't understand. They're dragging us back 500 years, and you're sitting here like a schmuck saying it's another culture like ours. Hey, schmuck, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. If they don't like it here, they don't like body scanners, they don't like their women to show their faces, let them go back to the hellhole they came from. That's my opinion. See, there's another side to me. What else do you want to talk about? That Obama is now going to abandon the civilian 9/11 trial for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in New York City, and he's going to do a military commission? They came to their senses? How about the fact that Murtha, one of the most corrupt congressmen in American history, who died this week, his wife now may run for his seat? This is like something out of the Philippines. It's like the Marcos family. Family members, particularly spouses, assuming a late politician's seat is not unusual in American politics. Well, no, not in the Philippines either. It's like, you know, Imelda Marcos with the shoes. Support bills for Murtha's wife taking seat. Shock poll, just 8% want incumbents reelected. Incumbents, that means Democrats or Republicans. I could run and I could win somewhere. I'm not running and I'm not winning. I don't want it. I could never be a politician. Never. I don't care what job you gave me, I couldn't do it as a politician. I'm born for radio. Here I am sitting, telling you what I think, combining the personal with the political, my history, my philosophy, my poetry, my scientific background. I'm enjoying it. I hope you're enjoying it, because you can call on any topic here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. San Francisco walking around buying antiques, huh? Why aren't you walking around angry, Mike? That's what we want from you. We don't want that side, that antique side. No, no. Give us the hard right stuff, or we'll listen to someone else, mate. Don't tell us nothing about no cloisonné. The only cloisonné we want are from the strip joints, Mike. That's what we want. The cloisonné. The nail cloisonné. You know what I mean, Mike. That's what we want. Don't talk to us about art. What, are you trying to be sophisticated like them libs? Huh? Hey, Mike. Hey, we're going to turn you off, Mike, if you keep that up. That sensitive side. We could do without it. Just play. Play the Rammstein for us, will you? Play the Rammstein. Another Rammstein.
Du hast nicht.
One of my favorite heavy metal groups, by the way. People walk around the streets with earbuds.
Du hast mich.
The whole world has gone insane. You talk about bees dying. Turn it off. Because I either one thing or the other. I can't even listen to it and talk. How do people walk around with earbuds? You know, the whole world has gone crazy. Like the honeybees are dying off. So is the human spirit. Of course they're dying off from cell phone towers. They're like crashing into each other and dying. They figure it's not even worth living with all these signals coming from weird places. But it's the same with people in the street with their stupid cell phones in their ears. I mean, the whole object of being a human being is walking around pollinating with other people once in a while, even strangers, if I may say. Bumping into someone, saying hello, having a random conversation, seeing who the person is. Not anymore. Walking around again like bees crashing into cell phone towers. Everyone on a device, a Kindle device, a headphone device, this device, a texting device. No one sees anything. No one hears anything. Everyone's into their electronic, you know, narcosis. At least I came from a time when you could talk to a stranger. Today you get arrested if you go and ask a stranger a question. 1-800-449-8255. Stories and politics and more right here on the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
I like this old timer, huh? Old Savage Nation bumper in the early days on the local station. Love it. Youthful, joyful, happy. Olympic lugger killed in practice run. Nodar Kumaritashvili, age 21, dies after losing control while going approximately 90 miles an hour and hitting a steel pole. Horrible. I never heard of such a sport. It's like a Borat sport. I'm not trying to make light of it. I mean, I couldn't do it, but what kind of sport is that? Did you lay on a teeny sled? Of course you're going to get killed or hurt. It's something Borat would do. We'd take like a piece of oilcloth and go down. I don't understand it. Olympic, how did that become? Everything's an Olympic sport. Checkers, chess, volleyball, arrows, you name it. It's an Olympic sport. Anything that NBC can package an ad around. Olympic lugger. I'm sorry he died. What kind of sport is that? It's not even a toboggan. I've been on a toboggan. I remember when I was a kid, I went up to, I used to love a toboggan. The Chateau Frontenac in Quebec. I would take a little bottle of brandy, I'd drink half of it, get on the toboggan, and have a good time going down a toboggan run. I mean, those were dangerous too, in a way. If they were too icy, you could lose control and go right off the toboggan run. But that's one thing to sit in a toboggan. How do they turn it into a thing where you sit on something the size of your behind and not expect to get killed? It's like the poor man's toboggan. They found a leftover refrigerator door somewhere in Kazakhstan, and they turned it into a sport. And next thing you know, NBC has it as an Olympic sport. It's horrible. No wonder someone's the dying injury. That's a sport, too. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Authorities say a chimp attacks volunteer near Tampa. Another one. Another chimpanzee. What is this with old women and chimpanzees? Chimpanzee has mauled and seriously injured a volunteer at a Florida primate sanctuary. I give money to one of the sanctuaries, the Chimp Haven. It wasn't there, though. Oh, it's a young woman. Attacked while cleaning a cage at the Suncoast Primary Sanctuary. Terrible. I mean, they rip you open there. The woman struggled with a 10-year-old chimp named Sean and locked herself in a bathroom to get away. Handlers were able to get Sean and another loose chimp back in their cages. Look, they're wild animals, and you got to understand that baby chimps are one thing, but when they grow up, they're pretty violent animals. Remember what happened a year ago in Connecticut when a woman had her face torn off when her friend's chimp went berserk? Well, that woman was a nut. I'm sorry. Not the one who got mauled in Connecticut. The owner? A nut? A nut! They showed pictures afterwards of her having dinner with the monkey. I'm not making this up. Dining with the monkey over candlelight in her house every night. Sleeping in bed with the monkey, the chimp. Taking a bath with the chimp. Do I have to get any more graphic? It's as far as they went in the pictures. Of course the chimp went crazy. How could you treat an animal like that and not expect it to go nuts when the owner's crazy, in my humble opinion? And there were allegations that the Xanax and some other drugs into the monkey at the time. What do you want from these poor animals? They're meant to live in the forest, in the arboreal forest. They're not meant to live in Connecticut with a diaper. I mean, you're putting me in a... No, I'm joking. Come on. That woman? Be worse than a mauling, I think. What if you had to sleep with that woman wearing and she put a diaper on you every night and doped you up while you ate with her? Oh, stop. That's a horrible thought. God. It's like most marriages in America today in Greenwich, Connecticut, I think, are like, truthfully, between that woman and the chimpanzee, is different than in the houses of Greenwich? How different is it? Most of the men over 70 are wearing diapers and they're on Xanax. So what's the difference? Okay, so we're talking about a bunch of different topics on the Savage Nation. I'm trying to make light of terrible things. What do you want from me? I have some stories. You really want to get sick. We'll give you the real horrible stories that are coming up. Here's a nice one that I like. Missouri okays drug tests for public officials and some welfare recipients. Well, to me, welfare recipients and public officials are in the same category, in the sense that public officials don't actually work, and they receive welfare in the form of taxpayers, you know, money for jobs that no one even understands what they're doing with them. So I have been saying for years, at least 15 years, I've been calling for the drug testing of public officials. Look, when you get a job, don't you have to get a drug test? I did when I took jobs at various radio stations, not anymore. Syndicated, they don't test you. But anyway, in those days, they did. You have to be drug tested. Now, why wouldn't you want to drug test a senator and a congressman? Because I can guarantee you, as I sit here, would explain most of the policies of the liberal Democrats is that they're on drugs. I'm telling you, prescription drugs, right. That's a big difference today. It's a real big difference, prescription drugs and illicit drugs. You know, really giant difference. So you got drugged up people in Congress who are disconnected from reality, passing bills, writing laws that make no sense to anyone except other drug addicts, and you wonder why the people are going berserk. We're like the chimpanzees in the house in Connecticut. We've had enough of it. You know, we'll put a diaper on them before they put another diaper on us, is what we're saying. I'll take your calls. That's all. Hawaii, Ernie, Aaron, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good heavens. I just called to give you a vote for the people are saying they don't want to listen to you and they're going to turn you off because you talk about the sensitive stuff. I think a lot of people, like myself included, listen to you because of your intelligence and your experience and your passion. You have.
Well, I would hope that there's a need. I hope that there's a requirement in talk radio for something more than Republicans are good. I got to tell you, I went to a dinner with George Bush the other day and Dick Cheney, and I got to tell you, these are swell guys on that golf course. And those Dems, I mean, shouldn't there be more than that?
Yeah, I think so. Just a little more. What do you think?
Well, all right. So I think that a man has to bring, you know, his own life into a show or else it's boring. You can get all of this off the Internet. But what you can get from talk radio that you can't get from the Internet is the human factor.
Yeah, someday I have to tell you the story about the bad dog. Were you talking about that monkey? Good heavens.
Well, you had a bad... You mean my bad dog or your bad dog?
No, it's just a bad dog story.
Oh, I want to hear it. I want to hear your bad dog story.
Okay, good. Maybe you can bleep it out if it's too...
Oh, go ahead. All right, guys, okay. Get the bleep button ready.
Two dogs are sitting in the waiting room waiting to see the doctor, and the one dog looks at the other and sees he's real nervous and... What's wrong with you? I said, I'm real sick. I don't know. I think they're going to put me to death. And he goes, really? He says, yeah, I bit their kid. He said, are you kidding? He said, no, the kid tortures me all the time. He sticks things in my ears, and he pokes things, and he pulls things. And one day he went to kick me down the stairs, and I turned around and bit him. And the parents caught me, and they said, oh, bad dog. We're going to put him to death. He goes, wow, that's a bummer. He goes, well, what about you? He says, well... Yeah, I got a little abuse in my family. I have this owner, and she's beautiful, and she's sexy, and every day she comes home and strips down, takes a shower, and then comes out all naked. She's hugging on me, and she's loving me, and she's rolling around, and day after day, one day I couldn't take it. She's bending over to get something out, and
hold it now. I think we got to stop right there. We get the picture. So what happened?
So, yeah, he says, so you're going to put you to death, too? And he says, no, I'm in here to have my nails trimmed.
Oh, you're bad. I hope the guys left that part in the story. Beowulf, did they get the end? Now, what part of Hawaii are you calling? The Kaneohe State Mental Hospital? Where are you actually calling from, Aaron?
Why am I?
Nah, come on. I couldn't resist. Where are you calling from? What town?
You told the monkey story.
No, but where are you in Hawaii? What part of the islands?
Waianae.
Waianae, the Waianae coast. That's the leeward side with the green water, some of the most beautiful water on earth.
Hmm.
Have you never gone swimming? They don't let you out of the hospital?
Huh?
They don't let you out of the hospital to go swimming on those beaches?
Once in a while. You know.
Oh, really okay. Who's pulling whose leg? Aaron, you're a good sport. I'm sending you a free copy of Band in North Beach from Michael Savage. Stay on the line. So we started with olives. The prosciutto was so sweet, I didn't know what to do. You know, remember I told you I made a pork chop the other day and I was guilty? The cholesterol. I mean, the reports came back from the doctor. My cholesterol so upside down as it's been for years. I said, this is horrible. I mean, my mortality is just fast approaching. And I can't take Lipitor. I can't take any of that. I took lovastatin last week to try. Again, I tried it. My legs didn't work. The deep muscles, so I think it is what it is. I mean, I want massive doses of vitamin C, vitamin E, massive amounts of garlic, and a couple of herbal things. I mean, I wrote books on this going back 30 years, so I'm going to have to do that. I can't take medication. My body won't handle it, that's all. Anyway, so there I am in the restaurant, and he puts out the prosciutto, and boy, was it sweet. I said, why is this prosciutto better than the other ones I've had here? He said, because each pig is different. I said, there we go again, mortality. Everything leads back to death and taxes. You know what I'm saying? No matter what you do, death and when you really think about it, every bite you take, it leads back to death and taxes. Every breath you take is death and taxes. So, you know, you can go nuts if you let it get to you, which is why God permitted man to discover alcohol, in my opinion. That eliminated some of the vicissitudes of existence for short periods of time. That's why it has been around like that. You know where the first wine was made? How many people really understand? This is a strange one. You know how we hate Iran now because of Ahmadinejad? We don't hate Iranians. Like, hate the sinner, not the sin. Hate the sinner, not the sin. Wait, I didn't hate the sin. Hate the sin, not the sinner. Well, hate Ahmadinejad. Don't hate the Iranians. You know what I'm saying? Don't blame them that you should hate. Not the Iranian people. They're the ones in prison. They've imprisoned them in their nation with their throwback ideas. But according to what I've read, viticulture originated in Iran, ancient Persia. You didn't know that, did you? You would have thought it originated in Italy. It didn't. Or in France. Originated in the ancient lands of Persia. Where did coffee first come into Europe? Came from Africa, Ethiopia. That's why it's called Coffea Arabica. Why? Because the genus and species tell you the whole story. If you know a little botanical Latin, you can learn an awful lot about the world that you live in. Coffea Arabica. Now, why did the Arabs find coffee so appealing? Because they don't drink alcohol if they're traditional Muslims. And they have a long and continuous prayer sessions all day. And coffee, of course, the caffeine content turned out to be the ideal drug for that society at that time. You see what I mean? How things work? Hand in glove. Well, you could also, I remember when I was an early ethnobotanical student, I was studying with one of the great men of the time, Richard Evan Schultes at Harvard University, who was one of the great ethnobotanists, and I visited him at Harvard, and he wrote some great papers on the use of coca leaves in South America. And he wrote back in the late 60s, and you should know this, that the Incans, or even truthfully, the South Americans who work at high altitudes, they can work at high altitudes for very long periods of time because they chew coca leaves, he said. And when the do-gooders try to take away the coca leaves, they lost their ability to work long periods of time at high altitudes. So there are certain, products, drugs, natural products in that regard, that are perfect for the culture and society in which they're originally grown or where they're growing. You can't suddenly condemn everyone who uses coca leaves. And by the way, you just should know this is a side note. I'm just rambling on now to show you the wide extent of my knowledge base, because there are things I do love to talk about that I never get a chance to express. You look at a coca leaf as opposed to cocaine, right? Oh, evil cocaine. And it is horrible, a disgustingly horrible, life-killing drug, cocaine. Nobody will argue with that. Nobody on earth would argue with that. Cocaine's a horrendous drug, but the coca leaf is not the same. Coca leaf contains cocaine as one of the alkaloids, but the last I remember, and I'm going back 30 years now in my reading, the coca leaf contains something like 16 other active alkaloids, as well as glycosides and other compounds. So what am I saying? You know, what I'm saying is, it's like drinking coffee, which contains caffeine, but it also contains other chemical components, right? It's different than taking a caffeine pill. So in other words, in the natural compound, the natural plant at which it's found, the coca leaf, cocaine is mixed with other compounds which somewhat ameliorate the dramatic effects that you get just from cocaine itself. In other words, it may not be as addictive, for example, for that reason. That's all, a little side note. So now let's get back to the sensitive, hard sides of the Savage Rock Show here on the Savage Nation. We got a rock and roll Friday. I started to talk about chimps. I don't know how I got into cocaine and coca, but okay. I told you, everything leads to death and taxes. I'll be right back. No break. No, we're going to have to play them a little. Rammstein. I want at least 30 good seconds of hard rock, heavy metal rather, Rammstein on Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. How you can bring them from Offenbach. No, I hate this one. Kill it. Break the record. Don't like it. Go back to Du hast nicht. I want Du hast nicht. That's much better. Picture a taxi driver in Manhattan listening. What's he going to listen to, this or Offenbach? Well, if he's from the Ukraine, he'll listen to Offenbach. If he's from Brooklyn, he's going to listen to this. Rock and roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Here in Insane World, I told you that the olive orchard up in Sonoma, my friend owns, is produced less olives, right? And he says he heard it's tied to the cell phones. Now, many people are calling about why the bees are dying out. You know, I told you, though, the world is going crazy, not just the bees. From all of these electronic signals, amongst other things, here's a shooting just happened this afternoon in Huntsville, Alabama. A female member of the Huntsville University shot and killed three co-workers during a meeting in the biology department. She's at a faculty meeting. She's a regular teacher. She hears she's not going to get tenure. She pulls out a gun and starts shooting and kills three people. Did you hear what I just said to you? Police also have the alleged shooter's husband in custody. I don't believe what I'm reading here. She doesn't get tenure, so she kills three members of the department? I mean, there were times that, and I'm sure many of you would have liked to kill coworkers, but you don't do it if you're sane. You know, I remember I once said to you, I heard once when I was in high school, so many things I learned in Jamaica High School because there were smart, commonsensical teachers. And a teacher once said, you know how you don't listen to everything? You're sitting there dreaming off, looking at the girl's ponytail, can't wait for spring, whatever. But certain things come in your head that you never, ever leave your mind, never. And one of them was the statement that the difference between a crazy person or a sane and an insane person is not what you think, but what you do. Many people have so-called insane thoughts, but you repress them. You don't act on them. That's the differential between an insane and a sane person. You follow what I'm saying? All of us get bizarre, nutty impulses in our life, sometimes on a regular basis, but we can control them. Crazy people can't control them. The question is, why are so many otherwise sane people becoming insane or deranged? And the answers are many, but the primary answer is Prozac and Prozac-like compounds. So many people are on these drugs, and these drugs are known to have a high incidence of suicidal and homicidal relationships to them. I don't think that the medical establishment wants you to know it, but it's well documented. You keep repressing urges in a person, and what do you think is going to happen? Tell me what you're going to, what's going to happen. Keep repressing urges, and eventually those urges are going to find a way out like water coming out of rock. There's only so much you can trick your mind and your body. Joe in New York, WOR, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I've been listening to you for years.
Thank you.
I was a New York City police officer in New York City.
Yes.
And I was on post in Manhattan, and an old beat-up car, foreign car, kept going around the corner, So the third time, I jumped out in front of him, stopped him.
Yeah.
And he rolls down a window, and I looked down at him, and I said, Rocky Graziano, I'm looking at him. I said, Rocky, what are you up to? He says, my wife is at a tea party in the area, and I'm looking for a parking place to park, you know. So anyway, I said, Rocky, I got to ask you this question. Who gave you your worst beating in the ring?
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, the worst beating I ever got was in the back of a station house by two detectives.
Oh, come on. Graziano said that to you?
He said that to me. He said I was a bad kid in those days.
Oh, my God, what a story that is.
Yeah, he was a nice
man. That's a great story. He was a great man. I actually met him myself, Joe. I don't want to get too personal. Let us just say, how can I do? Well, I was at a friend's wedding. My friend married his daughter. I don't know this guy. I met him. I haven't seen him in 30 years. He was the father, and I was in the. He was Italian. The daughter, the guy was Jewish. They went to a rabbi's office, and Graziano was there. I never forget him as long as I live. He was as hard as stone. Remember looking at this guy, how hard he was. And he said to the rabbi, he said, the Bible is the rock of ages. And as he put his hand on it and read a prayer, it was amazing. I never forgot it, Joe. Thanks for calling from WOR in New York City.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
Shabup, shabup. Want to hear the shabup, shabup?
Shabup, shabup.
There it is. I feel better.
Shabup, shabup.
It is Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation.
Shabup, shabup.
Very slow pace, but never sell today. And a boy actually held a girl actually held a boy, and they danced. Can you imagine? As we enter the world of Marxism under the college teacher from Chicago who is not getting his way, you're going to see some terrible things happen over the next months and years under this despot. Baby Doc Obama will, if he's not stopped, is likely to become, very likely to become, Papa Doc Obama. A story just came out that the New York Times will publish tomorrow that White House officials are figuring out ways to use the executive powers, meaning executive, writs, to advance energy, environmental, and other policy priorities that the American people do not want, that Congress does not want. So if you actually think that Obama is a nice guy who simply cares about America, you're out of your damn mind. The man is a far left, off the charts, radical leftist, never should have been president. We warned you, you didn't listen. You're going to pay the price for it. Many of you who switched over from the Republican side to teach the Republicans a lesson, I warned you. that even the old warhorse McCain, as bad as he was, would have been better. You didn't listen to me. And believe me, I know McCain's flaws. But here's what we're facing now. Because he cannot get it through the democratic process. They say he's going to use, because his radical left-wing friends in some of the most horrible places on earth, the radical left-wingers who do not believe in freedom, do not believe in democracy, they believe in despotism and serfdom, are pushing this character to use executive writs, something that you would see in a third world nation, to get his way with environmental, energy, and other policy priorities, including so-called health care. Years ago, I wrote a couple of big bestsellers, and many of you don't know this. I wrote, you know, The Savage Nation, then I wrote The Enemy Within, then Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, then The Political Zoo. In The Enemy Within, here's what I wrote. It said, saving America from the liberal assault on our schools, faith, and military. I failed, I have to admit. I did my best. I try to awaken you. I try to warn you. I wrote a book that I thought clearly laid out what the dangers were to we the people. It was published in 2003. It did very well, but it didn't save America. And I quoted the beginning, I quoted Cicero like this, a nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face in their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. Marcus Tullius Cicero, Roman orator and statesman in 42 B.C. And I had chapters, freedom, courts, health care. I had health care in there, military, media, faith, morality, schools, colleges, and mines. I try to warn you, and I asked you right in the beginning of the book, I wrote, who is the enemy within? Who is the enemy within? And I said, are there names to be named? Yes. And I said, there are enough names to fill this entire book. But then I said, perhaps we should put our own names in this book. Why do I say that? Because most of us have failed at our own democratic system by not being vigilant. Most of us have looked the other way while our borders, language, and culture have been diluted. So there it is. I wrote it. It is clear to me if God could vote, he would be a member of the vast right-wing conspiracy. In fact, to the mad dog leftists in the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, and the Democratic Party, God is the enemy himself. So there it is. I wrote it in 2003. I'm a prophet. I'm a radio prophet. Oh, how could you be a prophet? They wear white robes and they existed only in ancient Israel. There are no prophets today. You know, sometimes the common man or the average man has some prophetic streak in him. I try to awaken the country and I failed. I admit it. I apologize to you. I tried very, very hard, but it didn't work. And so therefore I do this show every day trying to save you from what Obama's trying to do to you and me and your children and your grandchildren. He's going to use executive orders now to get his way because he tried the legitimate way. The give and take of politics, and they said, yet, no, sorry, not going to work. You're too far off the scale. Most Americans don't want it. They're afraid of you, sir. Go back to Chicago where you came from. We can't wait until you leave. So he said, all right, I'll tell you what, now I'm going to really do it. I warned you that a cornered animal is very dangerous. His little coterie of friends there who are running this country are in a corner right now. They have failed to get their way on virtually anything except in the secret of night. Sure, they passed stimulus bill for Nancy Colasiosi and her pals and the bankers on Wall Street. Then they said the bankers are pigs. I love that one. They're the ones who bailed out the banks. Then they said now there's new pitches. Oh, those bankers are real pigs. He's the one who gave them the money. He's the one who bailed out Citibank, not me. I didn't say give them the money. He said it. He gave them the money. Now he's already not their friend. So, look, here we are. So I do this show every day. I'm going to try to alert you to the dangers of Obama and his minions because they're real. You know, I try to evaluate this every night. Like, how real is the threat of Obama and his radical leftist squad? Are they really a threat to the survival and to the freedoms of this country? Or is this just hype in order to sell a radio show and a website? I ask myself this every night. You know, Einstein spent the last years of his life trying to unprove his own theories to show you what a great mind he had. He wasn't afraid to challenge his own theories. Neither am I. I'm not afraid to challenge my own theories about and my own suspicions about Obama and Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod. I'm telling you, these are creatures from the Black Lagoon, as far as I'm concerned. It's like they've come up to Earth to suffocate us with octopus tentacles and put us into slavery through high taxation, through regulation, through things you can't even imagine they have in their mind. All you got to do is listen to his State of the Union speech to see where this guy wants to go. He wants to grant amnesty to all the 20, 30 million illegal aliens in order to ensure that the next 50 years of America are ruled by a bunch of illiterate people who don't even know what's going on. In other words, these people don't speak the language. They go, oh, sure, we'll vote Democrat. They're going to give us things. That's unbelievable to me that we sit here like idiots. That's why I quoted Cicero. But what you also don't know is that I'm writing, I think, my last book. I have embarked on a new venture. I'm not going to tell you the title. I'm not going to tell you the theme. I think you can pretty much figure it out. And over the next few months, I will slowly disclose what I'm writing. It's going to be my biggest and most important and probably my last book. And it's my last attempt to awaken you, the American people. I tried it before, and you thought it was humorous. I go to various restaurants, as you know, in San Francisco, and one of them is a very, very inexpensive Chinese restaurant. And the owner, who I think is probably as liberal as any or as nice as the people can be, he pulled me over the other day. He said, you know, Michael, you were right all along. He said, we just didn't know it. He said, you were right all along. He said, the illegal aliens, they're not citizens. They're eating us alive. I said, well, Johnny, what can I tell you? I try to warn the people, but they didn't listen to me. And so now even people who are moderate centrists are coming to believe that Savage was right and is right about borders, language, and culture. Even the moderates in the middle have come to understand the danger they are in from this extremist, out of the ken of reality of Obama. This is not an ordinary Democrat. Make no mistake about it. He is not even a liberal by any definition. He is an extremist, a Marxist by every definition. Now, Europeans would understand this. But as I told you, we Americans are rather naive politically. We don't even understand what a socialist Marxist is. I know the word socialist has now resonated because you've heard it from Fox News, because Hemorrhoid copied me. He's a very good student, and he's a very smart baby-faced student, which is good. And it finally got through to everybody. Yes, he's a socialist. But as I first started using this word, you didn't know what it was. I was the first in the radio to tell you he was a socialist. Oh, socialist. And I love the midstream media. Says, oh, some call him a socialist. What's so shocking about that? He's a naked, proud socialist. There are about 30 varieties of socialist. They range all the way from the benign to the terrible. Hitler was a socialist. Stalin was a socialist. Pol Pot was a socialist. Those are the extreme varieties of this illness called socialist. Then there are the moderate socialists, those who run Sweden or those who run Germany are moderate, modest socialists. Which one do you think Obama is? What do you think he actually is? I think you should be worried because he's given every indication that he's not exactly the benign form of this particular political disease. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, little girl of mine.
Yeah. It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Yes,
taxes for the middle class. Although he told you during the election campaign in 08 that he would not raise taxes on individuals making less than $200,000, he now gave an interview saying he will. So Obama lied and you'll be crying. You can even print the bumper sticker. Obama lied and I cried. Steal it from me. Steal this idea. Obama lied and I cried. Yeah, take it. Another undershirt for you. White House prepping for high court vacancy. How much further to the left of Sotomayor can they go? They'd have to like go to the... Where would they have to go to get somebody further to the left than Sotomayor? How much further to the left can they go? I think the one that's going to retire is another lib. So I was replacing a Marxist with a Marxist. That's a neutral. I just pray to God that the few conservatives that are in there, the five, you know, that the tickers are good. Who's the next one? Justice John Paul Stevens, who will turn 90 in April.
Oh, my Cracky! Oh, my Cracky, where are we here?
Well, Your Honor, you're in the Supreme Court.
Supreme what? What'd you say? Well, we're just sitting here now. What are we doing exactly today, eh? What are we doing up here? What's this in my hand?
You just vote the way we tell you, will you?
Yeah, sure.
It'll take away your pablum. 90 years old? Shouldn't there be like a term limit on a Supreme Court justice? Like, say, 80, 85? I never heard anything like this, like living in Rome itself. A high court vacancy this year would give Obama another chance to leave his legacy on the federal judiciary. Great. That's just what we need. Well, maybe Karl Marx has a great-grandson somewhere. Look who's in the lineup here. No! I swear to God, Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, big sis. She's one of the sources that they're liable to put on. No, they can't do that. Even the Republicans are liable to do something if they elected her. The woman failed us at least two occasions. The underwear bomber, the Fort Hood massacre, maybe one other. So she'd be perfect? What about Solicitor General Alina Kagan, 49? How's her? One of the most radical leftist college professors in American history. He would choose. It's frightening. Liberal activists. In other words, outright communists. This is unbelievable to me. Boy, we better stand up to this guy. This is unbelievable. Just say no. Make the Republicans vote no. I mean, you go back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I remember her confirmation hearings. I was shocked at the Republicans, or Orrin Hatch and the others. Yes, ma'am. Sure, ma'am. Of course, ma'am. Whatever you say, ma'am. May I lick your gold lame heels, ma'am. That woman was unqualified from the get-go. Ginsburg was the chief counsel for the radical communist ACLU. That should have disqualified her. But not to the check pants Republicans of that time. So if you think this just started yesterday, you're mistaken. The whole lot of them have to be cleaned out. You need all new people, top and bottom. Don't tell me the Republicans are going to save anything. They had their 8 years. Look what they gave us. We need fresh faces, new faces, and all conservatives to save the country. America's future is hanging like a loose tooth right now. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. New York City, WOR. Ron, you're the caller. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
I guess a quick thing, and then something just occurred to me while I was on hold with you. First and foremost, I have a physician client, I guess a friend of mine, who's known David Axelrod back in his Queens days for many years, and said he was a complete communist revolutionary then, and he's a complete communist revolutionary.
Axelrod comes from Queens. He's one of those red diaper dopa babies I love so much.
This is a very, very trusted, well-known physician. I won't name names, but a man I like and trust over the years.
So Axelrod comes from one of those families I love to talk about on the show with the oil cloth and the ILGWU and the triangle shirtwaist fire type?
I'm pretty positive. I'm pretty positive he fits somewhere in there, but that's up to.
How do these people get so far without being exposed? These radical East Side communists. How do they get so far in this country without people exposing them? How did this happen?
Well, you know what I really think, and it has to do actually with the segue point here, which is the reason why your book in 2003 hasn't translated into such success that it's, I guess, knocked this president, sort of out of the, not made or wouldn't have made this at all possible, is the fact that, I mean, your target audience, for that matter, I mean, most 20 to 30 year olds that I know couldn't handle you at hello. I mean, their brains are so warped from the education system.
Yes, they're sitting in a snowstorm freezing and they're convinced it's caused by global warming.
Right, right. And that being
in other words, they've lost all common sense. They're sheeple. They're the born sheeple. They're born for slavery.
So that's what you're up against.
So you have the slave masters have appeared in the form of Axelrod, in the form of Emmanuel, in the form of Obama, in the form of Pelosi. These are the most despotic individuals in the history of the American government. They're all despots. They hate democracy. And if they can't get it through democracy, they're going to get it by any means possible. The ethos of the radical communist.
Savage.
I got a whole lot of love.
This is the Savage Nation on Rock and Roll Friday. We're talking about the threats to your freedom. and threats to the freedom of America itself under this administration. There's a report that just came out, which says the New York Times is going to run a story this weekend where Obama's going to go around the voters and use executive order or executive orders to push through his radical leftist socialist agenda. I don't understand how you don't see what's going on here. You've got naked Marxists running the country. Just look at their history. What, have to wear a red beret and walk around with a Che Guevara sign for you to understand what they're doing? Marilyn, Leon, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I'm outraged that you would actually compare the President of the United States to mass murderers. I think that there are strong positions against him, but...
Well, I didn't say he's a mass murderer. Let's not jump to conclusions. I mean, you're the one who did, not me.
No, is it comparing him to Pol Pot?
No, what I said was socialists range all the way from the benign to the murderers, and I named Pol Pot, Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler, and others. And I said, where on the scale of socialist do you think Obama fits? I said, nobody knows, but I don't think he's one of the benign ones. I didn't say that he is one of the murderers. I mean, let's not run to conclusions, Leon.
You called him Baby Doc Obama, and maybe he'll be Papa Doc Obama.
All right, hold on a minute. Let me play a little soundbite for you from the campaign. Let's hear what you think of this, Leon. Maybe I'm wrong and you're right. Let me hear what you think of this. Play it.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
So, Leon, what does the president mean by a civilian national security force that's just as strong as the U.S. military? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, my historical reasoning immediately comes up to the brown shirts.
So that doesn't worry you?
Absolutely worries the hell out of me. Absolutely.
In other words, you do suspect that there is a tendency within the president towards the extreme.
I do worry a lot about it. My point is that by going to the extreme of comparison, instead of focusing on the specific, it tends to appear to be a rabble-rousing rather than an attack on the specific policy, and people tend to turn it off, and they don't want to hear about it because there's too much screaming.
What's interesting is that you didn't turn it off. You actually turned it on and called me. You got so outraged. And as a result, I was able to play for hundreds of thousands of Americans President Obama calling for a civilian national security force that you yourself just said smacks of the brown shirts in the Third Reich.
You're absolutely right. What my fear is that by taking it's not entertainment value. That's not what I want to mean. It's not demeaning. But by taking that type of, I don't mean it in a bad way, the rabble-rousing use of those kind of comparisons, it doesn't educate, it inflames.
Well, who's doing the rabble-rousing? Was it me playing that or Obama saying that to his rabble? Why was he rousing his own rabble before the election, offering them a brown shirt like National Civilian Security Force? What is he talking about? The Black Panthers with clubs outside voting booths? Was he talking about giving guns to Acorn? What was he talking about?
I think you're right. What I'm arguing about is presentation.
Well, okay. On the presentation side, we can disagree, but notice how it got your attention. And I can guarantee you people across America listening to the show heard that soundbite for the first time and are shocked to hear that Obama suggested it. Now, him and Axelrod... Him and Rahm Emanuel have pushed that aside. They're making believe he never said it, but he did say it. And now we read that he's going to go to the executive order to push through health care, to push through the phony cap and trade when we know there's no global warming, the whole thing was a fraud, to push through illegal aliens that are not citizens, that are pushing them out, he's going to push them in. I think they ought to wake up to who these people really are, and I want to thank you for helping me, Leon. I really want to help you for thank. I want to thank you for helping me. 1-800-449-8255. San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Eric, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes.
It's actually Pete in Utopia Parkway.
I don't know how that is. I must have pushed the wrong button, but go ahead, Pete.
You know, we didn't realize how utopian Utopia Parkway was back when I was a kid in Queens.
Little did I know that I lived in a socialist utopia when I was living on Utopia Parkway in Queens. I often wonder about that, the significance of that, that my, you know, it was like the era of Milltown, the perfect suburbs, the paved streets, the row houses. It was like a utopia in a way.
Have you been back there recently?
Well, there was very little crime. My mother was able to walk to the corner to get eggs and milk without getting assaulted by some gangbanger that was led into from the third world. You know, it was kind of utopia compared to the cesspool that America's turned into.
That's what I'm talking about right now. I've actually been back there recently. It's 100% Asian.
Yeah, but they're nice people. By and large, they're nice middle-class people. They work hard. They buy houses. They raise their families. They want exactly the thing everybody else wants.
Now about 690,700,000, and it is a very, it's still a low crime, nice neighborhood.
That's right, because Chinese are extremely excellent citizens in any community that you find them in around the world. They work hard. They're family oriented. The children work hard. The children work hard in school. Just look at the University of California at Berkeley. How many Asian kids get straight A's? They don't even let them in. Did you know that? Do you know that they put a racial bar against Chinese students in the University of California system? You probably find that shocking. In other words, they do so well compared to other minorities that they keep them out of the school in order to make sure that minorities who don't do as well get in there and ruin the school.
Yeah, equal opportunity.
See, I have long said I don't care what the race is. What I care about is the grades. It doesn't matter what the race is. What matters is how hard they work to get the A's. Then put them in. I don't care what they are. But you start taking kids out who get straight A's like Chinese, and you start putting in minorities who can't make the grades. You know what you have? You have colleges that are melting down.
Mike.
I know these are shocking concepts to liberals who want equal outcome, but they don't understand what that produces. All you got to do is look at Zimbabwe to find out what an equal outcome society produces, a society that can't even feed itself. You had a nation called Rhodesia. Admittedly, it was on land that was stolen by the white people who made monster farms, and the Africans were thrown off their own lands. The problem with the argument, though, is that Rhodesia, prior to it becoming socialist under Mugabe, the Zimbabwe that we know, was actually a net food exporter. The farmers, the white farmers, were so good at what they did, they were able to produce enough food for all people in Rhodesia and export food. Once the communist madman dictator Mugabe took over in his socialist utopia and renamed it Zimbabwe, what happened was is that the farmers were unable to grow enough food, not only to not export, but to feed themselves. They became a begging nation. That's the unfortunate reality there. People don't want to accept reality in some cases. They want to live with a dreamland about things. My friend, I hope I've explained myself clearly. If not, well, listen carefully, and maybe you will be a little more clear. Do we have Eric in San Francisco now, or was that the missed call? He's on 6. Okay, Eric, you're up from 860 on the dial in my hometown of San Fran. I almost can't say San Francisco. How are you today, Eric? I almost said sicko, Cisco. I can hardly say the word anymore, Eric.
No, it's okay, man. You know, I completely I like what you say about San Francisco. I'm all the way up here in Northern California. It gets kind of tiring having to hear all the crap that comes out of there. But
if you heard the opening to the show, I waxed how much I love the city today. I talked about the movable feast, walking through North Beach, buying cloisonné vases, going to my friend's restaurant. I mean, there's another San Francisco that people don't know about. They have to go on a walking tour with me to see the real San Francisco, not the cesspool that they normally see.
Well, the reason I wanted to call, man, is I listen all the time, and I hear all these people call in, and they get so upset at you. But I completely agree with what you had to say about Barack Obama. And you know what? He is going to become the dictator of the United States, and if we don't get
him... No, he won't. Not if the American people can stop him. No, he will not become the dictator. He's going to use every method possible. That's what communists do. They have a slogan, by all means necessary. They have slogans such as by all means necessary, meaning bypass the stupid people if you have to. And that's where he's going, because his communist agenda has been stopped. Stopped cold. The wheels came off Axelrod's bus. That bus is stopped. They're jacking it up and they're going to put treads on it. They're putting an 88-millimeter gun on it, and they're going to steamroll everyone in this country unless you wake up to the fact that they're at war with the people themselves. They're at war with the democracy itself. They're at war with the system itself. Have no doubts about it. If you think it's all rhetoric, it's because you're a fool. And it's because you don't really know what they're doing. Not you. I mean the people in general. Thanks for calling. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You don't remember me, but I remember you. 'Twas not so long ago.
I hearkened back to the 50s when the chrome was thick and the politicians were on the straight and narrow. 1-800-449-8255. My God. By executive order. That's something you'd expect out of the third world. But, oh, that's fine because it's progressive. Don't you know that progressive is a code word for socialist / communist? Don't you get it yet? Must things be spelled out in neon for the average American schmuck for him to understand it? I'm afraid so. Lynn in Las Vegas, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I have a question. It's off base of what you've been talking about, but because of what is probably coming, I want to get off of all the drugs that my doctors have me on, and I've tried by myself, but I'm not accomplishing that, and I'm on Percocet, Lyrica, Soma, Tramadol, all of these different things.
I don't want to play doctor because this is a complicated question. It's a medical question. How serious is your pain and what is it coming from?
I used to work for UPS, and I found out that I herniated 4 discs in my neck. I had disc fusion replacement.
Oh my God.
Titanium plate in my neck. I'm 36, and this happened.
But you're really injured. I mean, you have very serious problems. So, you know, it's simple for someone to say don't use painkillers, but they'd be a fool to say that when you're suffering racking pain. I'm sure you've tried alternatives. I mean, have you tried chiropractic?
As much as I can afford, yes.
Have you tried, you know, look, I can't do a medical show here, Lynn. It would be illegal, number one, but number two, would be foolish. Only a fool would give medical advice over the radio, so I'm going to pass on this one. All I can say is try some of the alternatives without giving up the medications. They're a lifesaver. I mean, you are suffering pain. That's what painkillers are for. You know, they're made for a reason. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Eugene, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, yes, it's a pleasure to speak to you. I've actually been on hold for a little bit, but I completely agree with what you're saying. This country of ours is coming to an end. I feel I'm actually from the Soviet Union, Ukraine, where I'm from. And
yes.
Our president, Barack Hussein Obama, is turning this country inside out. I feel like I'm back in the Soviet Union.
Well, that's what most Americans have awakened to understand. And so we've just read that tomorrow's New York Times, which is the Pravda of your old country, the Pravda of New York, will publish that he's going to use by all means necessary. That's a slogan of the Communist Party USA. The Revolutionary Communist Party uses that phrase, by all means necessary. He is going to get around the people and around Congress by using executive order to get his way. Now, he's been egged on by all of the left-wing slime in the blogosphere to go around the people. You understand that, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
we'll keep doing the best we can. I mean, Paul Revere is riding on the airwaves today. His name is Michael Savage today. I'm not a silversmith. I'm a wordsmith. Welcome to the program. How do you do? 1-800-449-825. Could you imagine if Obama appoints Janet Napolitano to the Supreme Court? How in the world could he even think of doing that? How in the world? The woman failed at her job already. She's a laughingstock. Did you see what she announced today? They're going to share top secret information with 10,000 TSA workers. I got to ask you a question. Here's a woman who failed to stop the crotch bomber who said everything worked perfectly. Here's a woman who refuses to investigate the connections to jihad and Islamofascism with the Fort Hood massacre. Here is a woman who is now going to give and share intelligence with whatever little intelligence they may have about potential terrorist attacks with 10,000 TSA employees. Now, let me try to use common sense here since that's lacking in the Obama administration. If you were a terrorist and you had sleeper cells in the U.S., or if you were a fellow traveler of the Islamofascist Party USA, you're a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, an engineer, but, you know, you pass for a norm. Let me ask you something. Don't you think that maybe some of them would be working as a TSA official? So, in other words, you're now going to share the names of people on the list with 10,000 people and keep it secret? Who else but somebody in the Homeland Security Department could come up with that idea and say, hey, hush, this is secret. We're only sending it out to 10,000 of you. I want you to keep it real tight-lipped. This is Janet Napolitano, better known as Big Sis. We're sharing it with only 10,000 people. It's a very small group. Keep it real tight. But here are the people on the list to watch for. Who other than a government official would think this way? Do you realize any the trouble we're in? This is beyond ridicule. It's beyond a joke. This is beyond Mad Comic. It's beyond South Park. It's something that only a government bureaucrat can come up with. Oh, I made it up? I didn't make it up. I didn't make it up at all. It's in the news. She wants to share her secrets with 10,000 members of the TSA. Well, that's fine. This is the woman who refuses to use the word Islam or Islamic to describe the nation's terrorist enemies. I think the word abortion came up in that list, and Christian came up in the list, but not Islamic or Islam. We're living in a very strange place right now. This just came out as well. Reid tricks Republicans and acts as a jobs bill and tax cuts. You say, taxes are boring. No, they're not boring. As Hayek wrote in the 1940s, I believe, the road to serfdom begins with high taxation and overregulation. That's where it begins. And so let's go back to the beginning of my show where I said everything leads back to death and taxes. The return of the death tax. Many of you don't understand what this will do to this country. One of the good things that Bush left us was the elimination of the death tax. That means the inheritance tax. Now, many of you who are poor think that rich people should pay taxes more than you do. Unto itself, those kind of graded taxes, meaning the more you make, the more you pay, is communistic. I think it should be one tax for everyone, don't you? Do you know that 61% of Americans pay no taxes at all? Are you aware of that? That 6 out of 10 are deadbeats? But let's put that aside. So let's say the estate tax now is zero, but Barack Marks Obama wants to reinstate it at a 55% rate. Now, that means that if you own a family farm or a family business and you want to leave it to your children, they will have to sell the business or the farm to pay the government the death tax, and they'll go out of business. The farm will be closed or the business will be closed. You say, well, who cares? They're rich anyway. If they have that much money, who cares about them? Well, you better think that through. Remember what this is. If somebody accumulated an estate worth more than $1 million, it means that it's after-tax money. They've been taxed, taxed, and taxed, and yet they still accumulated a million dollar estate. So who is it that gives the government the authority to steal 55% of that, to give it to deadbeats who don't even work for a living, or to pay for communist social programs that most people who work for a living don't want? Who gave them the power to do that? Now, liberals will argue that even under Republicans such as Dwight Eisenhower in the 50s, the top tax bracket was as high as 90%. I've heard that over and over again. But I actually looked into that. And I'll have more to say about that next week, because I don't want to do it in 2 seconds or 30 seconds. What you don't know is that although the top tax bracket was as high as 90% in the 1950s, there were tax dodges or tax shelters and tax deductions that no longer exist. And these tax deductions, these tax shelters of the 50s, since they don't exist, have been, should they exist, would wipe out the 90% tax rate. I don't think you understand it unless you're in a higher tax bracket, but I'm going to develop it for you next week. So before you start attacking the neighbor who does better than you, you better think very carefully, because they're the ones who actually create the businesses and the jobs that you hold. If you tax them out of business and you tax out their incentive, they're going to either retire early or sell their business, and you'll have nothing. You'll have no job at all. Think one salami in a butcher shop in Poland.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
she feel fine. My 409, my 409. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes.
It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Before I knew there would be a time.
Giddy up, 409.
When I would buy a brand new 409.
Well, what a day this is for news. It's unbelievable. The big news, and there really is big news, Obama gave an interview where he has proven to be a liar once again. He gave an interview with Bloomberg Businessweek that hit newsstands today, and he said he's going to, well, go and raise taxes, not on the rich, not only on the rich, but on households making less than $250,000 a year. Did you hear this? Did you hear this? So there's Obama, and he said that a presidential budget commission needs all options on the table, including tax increases for the middle class and cuts in programs such as Social Security and Medicare. Obama said to Bloomberg, "The whole point of it is to make sure that all ideas are on the table. So what I want to do is to be completely agnostic in terms of solutions." How do you like that? Whatever that means. Now, as you may remember, during the 08 campaign, Obama pledged repeatedly that he would exempt households earning less than $250,000 a year from tax increases. But here we go again. He said that limiting the agenda of any tax raises to any one group would cripple his agenda from the start. Obama said, "What I can't do is to set the thing up where a whole bunch of things are off the table. Some would say we can't look at entitlements. There are going to be some that say we can't look at taxes." And he says, "And soon you just can't solve the problem." The Bloomberg report notes that the middle class would be the target of tax increases because the administration's budget already has targeted Americans making more than $200,000 with its proposed $970 billion tax increase over the next decade. So there we go. Obama has backtracked. He is now open to taxing the middle class, exactly what we warned you this Marxist would do during the campaign. But you didn't listen to me. You just didn't listen to old Savage. Now, that certainly is the lead story. There are many others, and we've also talked about another dry little topic, like the return of the tax on inheritance, the death tax. You see, under the Bush administration, one of the few good things that happened to America was that he eliminated the death tax. What does that mean? This meant that estates over $1 million would no longer be taxed again because they had already been taxed over the lifetime of the person who had accumulated this money. So a person who worked hard their entire lives would then be able to pass their money on to their children or to any charity they wish instead of giving it 50% or more of it back to the government. What Obama wants to do is reestablish the death tax at a rate of 55%. That means that if you manage to buy a house that at your death would be worth $1 million, when you died, your family would have to sell it or your farm or your business because the government would demand over half of the money. Many businesses had to be sold when the death tax was in place in order to pay the taxes on the death of the father or mother. So Obama wants to take money out of the pockets of widows and children to pay for his Hugo Chavez-style socialism. That's another big one. You know, you think taxes and death are inevitable. They are. But there's such a thing as crippling taxes and making your life a living death. Well, that's what we're going to get into unless you stand up to this Marxist administration, in my opinion. Well, the last of the Kennedys is leaving Congress. Patrick Kennedy has announced that he will not run for re-election.
"I'm Patrick Kennedy. We all know how difficult the past few years have been. Rhode Island families have struggled, stung by job loss, health insurance denials, home foreclosures, and retirement insecurity. Illness took the life of my most cherished mentor and confidant, my ultimate source of spirit and strength. From the countless lives he lifted to the American promise he helped shape, my father taught me that politics at its very core was about serving others. My father instilled in me a deep commitment to public service, whether through elected office like he and his brothers, or nonprofit advocacy like my Aunt Eunice's work with Special Olympics. Now, having spent 2 decades in politics, My life is taking a new direction, and I will not be a candidate for re-election this year.
Thank goodness for small favors, but on the other hand, Joe Biden is still out there.
I am very optimistic about Iraq. I think it's going to be one of the great achievements of this administration.
What?
But if you see what's happening, particularly with Al-Qaeda and the Arabian Peninsula, they have decided to move in the direction of much more small bore but devastatingly frightening attacks.
Detroit.
But I think what you're seeing morphing here and is a concern to us.
Yeah, what are you going to do about it, Joe? At least Senator Jeff Sessions seems to be able to muster some outrage.
Mr. Brennan has gone further than simply confusing the law. He's confused reality. He defiantly declares that the administration made the right call on Abdul Muttalib and that providing captured terrorists with civilian due process has no negative impact on our ability to gather intelligence. Now, I dispute that. That is totally illogical. There is no doubt that you lose intelligence when you appoint a person a lawyer and tell them they have a right to remain silent. This is what Mr. Brennan says. There is little difference between military and civilian custody, close quote. Not so. He argues, quote, other than an interrogator with a uniform, the suspects get access to a lawyer and the interrogation rules are nearly identical, close quote. That is absolutely false.
Other stories from Michael Savage. I talked about my movable feast, my personal Paris and Jerusalem, and that is North Beach, San Francisco. Very important story for me. The sound was good today. Patrick Kennedy announcing not running for re-election. Republican Senator Jeff Sessions called out John Brennan. I'm mirandizing the crotch bomber. I can't pronounce names like that. Should change his name to Abdul or just call himself Mr. Crotch. Also in the sound department, Chuck Schumer, you know him, Bigfoot, talked about the steps to overturn the Supreme Court's ruling on campaign finance. In other words, he wants to go around the Supreme Court because he's the supreme leader. Howard Dean, you know, Mr. Yahoo, says Republicans don't believe in science anymore. Okay. Right. Well, those are some of the big topics on the Savage Nation. Had a lot of red wine later. Can I tell you something about red wine? The night before I went to a restaurant, I ordered some red wine from Italy. Horrible. I had one sip. One sip, I already felt a backhead headache. I sent it. I said, sorry, I don't want it. I pulled out a bottle of, it was Chianti. I had it in one of my locations from 2000. Now, Chianti is a Sauvignon, Sangiovese grape, number one. Many people get headaches from Chianti wine, and I know about the whole tyrosine issue. I wrote about it in 1983. So, you should understand a lot of it is not exactly true, and the tyrosine levels go down in time. I had a bottle of, what was the name of the brand? I shouldn't even give it, but it was a Ducale. You know what it was, gold label, 2000 Oro. And all of the rough, you know, taste went out of the wine. I was able to drink like a half a bottle, no headache. I woke up feeling like there was velvet between my joints. It was amazing. I'm not going to repeat it again. I mean, red wine makes me sleepy. God. It slows you down the next day. You become almost like a normal person. And if you're in my line of work, you don't want to be like a normal person ever. So here we are. I'm glad that I have a forum and I have a microphone and I can, you know, tell you like it is.
Savage.
It is Friday, and here's James Hurston with a report on the shenanigans going on in Hollywood.
When it comes to comic books, superheroes have mostly been these all-American patriots. I mean, you remember Superman, Batman, a Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, and Aquaman banded together to work in the Justice League of America. Superman always stood for truth, justice, and the American way. But it turned out that Hollywood screenwriters were more dangerous to the Man of Steel than Kryptonite. since that slogan of truth, justice, and the American way was altered in the 2006 movie Superman Returns, it was changed into truth, justice, and all that stuff. According to the filmmakers, the slogan was intentionally changed to make the movie more appealing to global sensibilities. The executives, of course, also had their eyes fixed on that overseas box office. But no comic book hero could be more associated with love of country than the Marvel Comics character Captain America. But something strange happened to this red, white, and blue-clad superhero ever since Disney purchased Marvel. In scenes contained in issue number 602 of the comic book, Captain America and his African-American sidekick, the Falcon, are seen observing a rally. The rally has protesters. The protesters are carrying signs. The signs read, quote, "Teabag the libs before they teabag you." Another sign in the comic book reads, quote, "Stop the socialists," close quote. Now, in this scene, Captain America turns to his partner and comments that the event looks like a, quote, "anti-tax thing," close quote. And the Falcon, Captain America's partner, then replies that he would probably not fit in with, quote, "a bunch of angry white folks," close quote.
What?
This in a comic book.
Unbelievable.
So Tea Party representatives were understandably upset at this superhero attack on the movement. Michael Johns, a board member of the nationwide Tea Party Coalition, went on Fox News and told them that the comic book slams were juvenile. He said that the Tea Party movement has been reflective of broad concerns of all Americans. And that's true. But to his credit, Joe Quesada, the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, apologized in an interview with a website. He said he was sorry for depicting the assembly as members of the Tea Party, and he said it was, quote, "just one of those stupid mistakes." Quesada claimed that those protest signs messages were put there by a letterer. Those are the guys who put the letters in the comics. And he said that the letterer accidentally pulled slogans from actual signs, that Marvel caught the mistake after printing up millions of these comics books, and they've removed the messages so in future reprints, well, the messages won't be there. So was this really an inadvertent slip-up? Or was this Marvel editor doing a little bit of damage control? Or does it have something to do with their new parent company, Disney?
Hmm.
The chairman of Disney is Robert Iger. He's a well-known Democrat donor. He's the guy who refused to allow the distribution of the 2006 ABC miniseries, The Path to 9/11, which was known as critical to the Clinton administration. And Disney sure seems to be working hand-in-hand with the Obama administration. In July of last year, in 2009, at the Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida, the newest animatronic edition was unveiled, surrounded by 42 other U.S. presidents. There it was, a robotic President Barack Obama figure. Disney sculptor Valerie Edwards created the Obama figure's likeness, and she said it was a great pressure to do the accurate job of somebody that's in the media so often. She used a big pile of pictures and lots of video footage of Obama to capture even the slightest facial expression. Here's what she told CNN. She says, "I can watch the different speeches. I can watch his cadence as he speaks. I can watch his muscles as they move. I can see how his face changes as he speaks to see if there's any dominance in muscle." Disney retitled the show and called it The Hall of Presidents, a celebration of liberty's leaders. Eric Jacobson, the senior VP of creative development at Walt Disney Imagineering, went on cable TV and said that the President Obama cyborg is the most dynamic figure Disney has ever created. Although, for some reason, they forgot to install the ever-present teleprompter.
Ha ha.
Now Disney is getting involved with the White House's new Let's Move campaign. This is a campaign that seeks to get rid of kid obesity, childhood obesity. So the company is creating public service announcements featuring Disney characters, you know, the ones children love, in order to encourage a healthy diet and lots of exercise. Now, critics may accuse the Obama administration of being a bit too Mickey Mouse with the issue, but the PSAs will appear sometime this year on all these various venues in the Disney media empire, including the Disney Channel, Disney XD, Radio Disney, and Disney.com. Although the entire Obama family is working on this Let's Move movement, trying to get rid of obesity, and the president signed a memo creating a task force, of course, to get rid of childhood obesity, this is the First Lady's signature issue. But one thing we can be sure of, even though Disney's involved, even though cartoon characters are involved, we won't be seeing those memorable Fantasia dancing hippos. Thanks, Michael, for the opportunity to speak to the Savage Nation audience. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. You know, the media always seems to gloss over any news that's negative about Iran, right? Here we have a recent announcement on their nuclear plans, their open hostility to the West. We're not supposed to ignore what's happening. Here to tell us about what's really going on in Iran is Ken Timmerman.
Yesterday, as you know, Michael, was the 31st anniversary of the Iranian Revolution of 1979 that overthrew the Shah. And everybody was looking ahead to this, wondering what was going to happen. The opposition had been claiming it would rally millions of people onto the streets. It would be a huge showdown with the regime. Clearly, the regime was very worried about these claims of the opposition, and they mobilized tens of thousands, some people say as many as 100,000 Revolutionary Guards, Basiji troops, and plainclothesmen to be able to put down the demonstrators. Before the demonstrations began, they were arresting the ringleaders for days ahead of time to prevent any kind of organized activity. They didn't succeed entirely, but there was not a mass confrontation on a Thursday, as many people had expected there to be. A number of things happened, I think, that were quite significant. You had small actions, targeted sabotage by the pro-democracy people in Tehran and other cities, Tabriz notably. For example, the regime had put up these loudspeakers all over in city streets so they could pipe in the Islamic Republic's national anthem everywhere and drown out any kind of opposition chanting. Well, invariably what happened is that folks in these cities attacked the loudspeakers, either knocked them down, disconnected them, smashed them with rocks, or you know, some other way disabled them, but the system did not work yesterday as it was supposed to work. You also had isolated incidents where there were clashes between the police and demonstrators, but no mass demonstrations. Some things did happen, though, that were quite extraordinary and showed just how worried the regime is. You had a former president, Mohammad Khatami, and one of the presidential contenders from this past June, Karoubi, both of whom tried to go to the streets in their cars to go to the head of demonstrations. They were attacked, both of them, by armed Basijis with clubs. Khatami's car had all of its windows broken. Karoubi himself was reportedly clubbed on the head until he was bleeding and taken to hospital. So there was some, you know, pretty blatant over-the-top violence in Tehran by the regime forces in a desperate attempt to put down any kind of demonstrations. You also saw that they had bussed in tens of thousands of people from all over the country to make a show of force. Nevertheless, as Ahmadinejad was speaking in Freedom Square in Tehran, it was kind of funny. Some of the YouTube videos that we've seen that have made it through the censorship show crowds of people chanting, "You lie, you lie," as Ahmadinejad himself is speaking to the crowds.
Well, of course, the media won't report any of this.
Now, all of this is happening, Michael, to the backdrop of Iran's rapid pace nuclear development program. They are rushing to get the bomb. We had Ahmadinejad just last week saying he would announce a surprise to the world on February 11th when it came to Iran's nuclear program. And what he did eventually announce was that they were going to enrich uranium way beyond the civilian needs that they had for their reactor, which is about somewhere between 3 and 5%. They were going to enrich uranium up to 20% for a research reactor that they have in Tehran. Well, we need to understand that as soon as you enrich already to 3 to 5% for civilian needs, you are something like 50% of the way to weapons-grade material. So they are demonstrating now that they have the ability to enrich uranium to weapons grade and that they can do it very quickly. There are no safeguards that the Iranian regime is respecting. The International Atomic Energy Agency is helpless to stop them from enriching up to 20% or even up to weapons grade. So we've seen that they are increasingly brazen. They are not worried about efforts by the international community to prevent them from getting a nuclear weapons capability, because they haven't seen any serious effort by the United States or any of our allies. Frankly, we've done nothing to prevent them from acquiring nuclear weapons. President Obama has been saying he's going to engage the regime. That has certainly egged them on. That has encouraged them to continue all of the things that they're currently doing. And now we're hearing from the White House and the State Department that, well, they're going to see if they can get some kind of sanctions at the United Nations. The Iranians have already seen three rounds of sanctions from the United Nations, and it hasn't done anything at all to them. So they're not terribly worried by the threat of sanctions at this point.
Well, what does affect them then?
The only thing that is really serious, and it has already had an impact on the economy, are the sanctions, two forms of sanctions that have not been done by the U.S. government, but it essentially started as private initiatives. The first is that by the state of California, Louisiana, Ohio, and a number of others to prevent the state pension funds from investing in companies doing business in Iran. And here I really have to commend Steve Posner, the insurance commissioner in California, who's running for governor, who has essentially put all the insurance companies on notice that he will deny them certification if they continue to invest in companies doing business in Iran. I think this is a terrific initiative. It is certainly having an impact in Tehran. I do not know what Mr. Posner's political situation is or if he has a political motivation in this, but I can tell you, as somebody who watches Iran very, very closely, this is one measure that has had an impact on the Iranian regime, and it's got them worried. The second thing was done by Congress, but I say it's a bit of a private initiative because it didn't start in Congress, and that is the bill that eventually passed not too long ago, in the beginning of February, over the objections of the White House to put sanctions on companies selling refined petroleum goods to Iran. This is also important. It's gotten the regime's attention. They are weak in this area. They're vulnerable. They do not make all the diesel fuel and heating oil that they need. They're now claiming they're going to build 7 new refineries, but that's going to take them years to achieve. So this is an area where the regime is vulnerable and where that kind of sanction can impact the regime's credibility with the people and can also demonstrate to the people of Iran that the regime is isolated and it's actually doing damage to the people.
What's the latest news?
Well, my latest story on Iran, Michael, deals with the Voice of America's Persian service. And, you know, we've had a Persian service broadcasting into Iran since roughly the time of the revolution in 1971. It's always been played with difficulties. There have been, you know, factional squabbles, personal squabbles at VOA, the Voice of America, between various exiles and people of different political tendencies. But recently what we're seeing is something much more serious, in my view. The reporting by the Voice of America's Persian service has been, in fact, slanted in favor of the regime in Tehran, not a pro-American point of view. So we are spending something like $16 million a year in U.S. taxpayer funds, close to $800 million a year for all of the international broadcasting activities of the government, to send TV programs into Iran that essentially comfort the regime. They aid and abet the enemy, if you wish. At the head of the Persian News Network at Voice of America is a man named Alex Belita. He's been criticized by broadcasters, Persian broadcasters who work under him, for a complete lack of knowledge of Iran. So he's in charge of our broadcasting into Iran. He doesn't understand Iran at all. He does not speak Persian. He does not studied Persian history or even recent Persian history, as people who are watching Iran do, and yet he's in charge of our broadcasting effort. We're hearing, for example, that the broadcasts are taking orders from the State Department during the elections in June. This meant that they were calling Iranians to come to the polls to vote in the elections. Didn't matter who they voted for, just as long as they voted. Well, the regime made very clear that that was exactly what they wanted to happen, because they knew they were going to cook the election results anyway. They wanted people to come to the polls in large numbers so they could then turn to the outside world and say, see, we have a democratic election. This is a democratic country. You can't punish us for not having elections. Well, we saw where that got us. So the State Department has been playing a role at the Voice of America. Recently, you had 30 of the Persian language broadcasters who went to protest to the head of VOA, Dan Austin, about the editorial interference of Alex Belita and Ali Sajati, who is his Iranian co-editor, if you wish, the man that he relies on for the Persian broadcast. So you've got a guy who doesn't speak English, Belita, running a entire television network that's all in Persian. So he doesn't understand anything that his broadcasters are saying on air or what the content of the program is. So he's relying on this other guy, Ali Sajati, who is an Iranian-American, whose father is a mullah, still in Tehran, teaches Islamic studies. And Ali Sajati has been clearly somebody who is pro-Islamic Republic and shouldn't, and really, in my view, has no business being on the Voice of America Persian service.
Who is leading the charge against Iran?
One of the great ironies of history here, Michael, is that you now have the president of France, Nicolas Sarkozy, who has become the leader of the Western world. It is Sarkozy who, in fact, is leading the effort in Europe and even trying to lead the White House towards greater sanctions on Iran. It's Sarkozy who is insisting that Iran's nuclear weapons program is unacceptable. It's Sarkozy who is saying that if the UN won't do it, we have to do it in some other forum. You know, this is quite ironic when you consider the role of France under Chirac just 7 years ago in the lead up to the war in Iraq, where France was trying to prevent the war and trying to prevent the United States from leading the free world to ousting a dictator in Baghdad. So France is now the leader of the free world. The United States is dithering. Obama is seen, I think, pretty widely in Europe and the Middle East as a weak president who doesn't really know what to do when confronted with a serious challenge such as that posed by a nuclear-armed Iran. Frankly, I think the next couple of months are going to be filled with surprises. Some of those surprises are going to come from Iran. We have not seen the end of their nuclear weapons program, and we've certainly not seen the end of their crackdown on the protest movement, nor do I think we've seen the end of the protest movement itself. This game is not over. I think the movement itself is alive. It is going underground, so to speak, to regroup, but I think they will reemerge in a couple of weeks or at most another month for another very serious round of protests against the regime. I look forward to being back here with you, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks for the update, Ken.
Savage.
Here are some of the other headlines on MichaelSavage.com. I can't go into all of these stories, but some of them are amazing. Missouri House okays drug tests for public officials and some welfare recipients. Now, I've been saying for years that all public officials should be drug tested. Why? Because if you take a job, don't you have to be drug tested? Well, what's more important than drug testing the people who make the laws? You see? I think it's long overdue. As well as welfare recipients. Why should you drug test a welfare recipient? Because they're living on someone else's earnings. Why are they entitled to live off your hard-earned work, especially if they're drug addicts? That's it. Associated Press reports that desolate malls and empty office buildings may come soon. The big default on commercial real estate loans is the next looming economic crisis. They're warning that over the next several years, failed commercial real estate loans could litter American cities with empty stores and office complexes, cause hundreds of bank failures, and weaken the economy. Huh, terrible. Administration is just not responding to questions about the Fort Hood massacre, said Kit Bond, the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He told bloggers on a conference call that the Obama administration still had not provided his committee with all the info it had requested about the November terrorist attack by a Muslim psychiatrist at Fort Hood, Texas, which left 12 or 13 dead and 30 injured. He shot them all in cold blood. Are you surprised? Everyone knows that Obama is an apologist for Islamofascism. You understand this? You don't have to look any further than CARE and how they have bought off several high-ranking politicians in our government, in my opinion. Also on Michael Savage, Kennedy will not run for re-election in Rhode Island. That's the last of the Kennedys. Rep. Patrick has decided not to seek re-election after 8 terms in Congress, saying his life is taking a new direction just months after the death of his father and mentor, Senator Edward Kennedy. It's sad in a way, but I think he's reading the handwriting on the wall for congressional Democrats, particularly for liberal Kennedys. This may be the end of the Kennedy era. Who's next? We don't dare to guess.
It's like the end of the line of Roman emperors or something.
It is. Then, of course, there's the sad sack Alec Baldwin. He attacks a photographer after being released from the hospital, and his friend blames his former wife for the circus. Emmy-winning actor Alec Baldwin attacked a photographer while police and a PAC reporters looked on with amazement. Wasn't arrested. You see, he has a separate set of rules that apply to him, because he's an actor. If you had attacked a photographer, you would have been arrested, particularly after threatening your 14-year-old daughter that you'd commit suicide with pills. But look, anything for publicity when you're a mentally corrupt liberal, in my opinion. Those are some of the big, big stories that made it to the Savage Nation today. It is time for the Savage Nation Week in Review. On Monday, Representative Murtha died, and of course the media tried to make him look like a saint. But listen to these sound bites that show how Murtha treated our Marines in Iraq.
There was no firefight. There was no IED that killed these innocent people. Our troops overreacted because of the pressure on them, and they killed innocent civilians in cold blood.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened. The one Marine was killed, and the Marines just said, we're going to take care. They don't know who the enemy is. The pressure was too much on them, so they went into houses, and they actually killed civilians. At first, they tried to say it was an IED. There was no IED involved in this. This was troops who went in. They were so stressed out, they went into houses and killed children, women and children. 24 people they killed.
On Tuesday, there was a talking head trying to tell us global warming is causing snowstorms.
These snowpocalypses that have been going through D.C. and other extreme weather events are precisely what climate scientists have been predicting, fearing, and anticipating because of global warming. In fact, you could argue these storms are not evidence of a lack of global warming, but are evidence of global warming. Thus, the 26 inches of snowfall in the D.C. area and the second giant storm this year.
We know it's counterintuitive, but you see, they're so much smarter than you are. And then Wednesday, there was Hollywood idiots flying in to Haiti, Sean Penn, after the real good people of America, the firemen, the non-governmental organizations, the Christian groups, went in there and did the hard work of rescuing people from the rubble. There was this piece of Hollywood trash going over there saying that America doesn't do enough.
And now, the Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
I've been here about 2 weeks. We had spontaneously formed an NGO called the Jenkins Penn Haitian Relief Organization. The idea of just bringing 7 doctors down. We had a total of 30 people with relief workers. We're just treating patients. We've done 3 food distributions and building every day in a situation that needs a lot more building by a lot more people.
And here's Dianne Feinstein talking to a panel of experts on the fact that we will be hit with another terror attack.
What is the likelihood of another terrorist attempted attack on the U.S. homeland in the next 3 to 6 months? High or low? Director Blair?
An attempted attack, the priority is certain, I would say.
Mr. Panetta?
I would agree with that.
Mr. Mueller?
Agree.
General Burgess?
Yes, ma'am. Agree.
Mr. Dinger?
Yes.
All right. I think that tells us something very clearly.
Oh, my God. They're doing nothing to protect us.
Savage.